Okay, first thing I'd like to do today is, before we get to working some of these problems, talk about this method of proving something invalid. I think I can erase this now. We'll look at these problems again today, too. I mentioned to you yesterday and earlier that there's a lot quicker way to find out if an argument is invalid than going through the entire truth table. And the reason that you might want to use this method on occasion is because sometimes when you're doing a long proof like this, you may wonder whether the argument is valid or not, and whether you're just not smart enough or you haven't found the key yet, and or whether the argument is invalid, you're going to frustrate yourself to death trying to prove it valid through all these rules. And you may discover that you can't prove it valid, but you may wonder whether maybe you're just not good enough at it yet. So there's a good way, a quick test to find out whether it's valid or invalid. Now this won't prove, it won't give you all the rigorous proof as to how to show it's valid with all of these rules, but it will sure tell you whether the argument's invalid or valid, real quick. And what it boils down to essentially is, remember in our truth table method, what we did is an invalid argument was one which had true premises but a false conclusion. And so if we could find any line of the truth values, the possible truth values, which had true, which made the premises true but the conclusion false, then we had an invalid argument. All we needed to find is one of those. And so what we're going to do as far as using a proof of invalidity is to look at an argument and try to assign values that will make the conclusion false, but the premises both or however many premises there are, the premises all true. And so to illustrate that, let's just take one argument. This argument happens to be invalid. And let's take the argument F horseshoe R, P horseshoe R, therefore F horseshoe P. Okay, that's an invalid argument. Now how are we going to prove that's invalid? What we're going to do is we're going to say, what assignment of truth values to these different variables, F, R, and P, what assignment of truth values, either true or false, to each variable will result, can I find a set of truth values that will result in a conclusion that's false, but in premises that are true? If I can find a set of values, just one set of values that will do that, then I've proven that the argument is invalid. So, well, all I'm going to try to do is, first of all, F horseshoe P, what assignment of F and P would make that statement false?
Yeah. Well, in any place where F was true but P was false would be what would be false.
Exactly.
Line 2 of a two-part table.
Right. Remember our definition of the horseshoe symbol. We found that P horseshoe Q was, if P is true, well, let's see here. Put P and Q. P horseshoe Q. Just to review here. The only way that this thing is false is if, in this case, if the premise, the antecedent is true and the consequent is true, but the only place it's false is here, in the second line. If this is false, of course, this is always going to be true. And so, if I want to make F horseshoe P false, the only way I can do that is to assign F true and P false. That's the only way that this condition is going to be false. And so that's what I do. Because if I'm going to try to prove this thing invalid, then I'm going to have to make the conclusion false. And in this case, the only way I can do that is to have this true and this false. Okay? So what we're really doing is reconstructing a certain line on our truth table. So let's just do this here. We've got three variables, F, P, and R. Okay? And then our conclusion is F horseshoe P. That's the conclusion. And our two premises are P horseshoe, F horseshoe R. One of the premises, and P horseshoe R. That's another premise. Okay, now I want to make my conclusion false. So the only way I can make it false is to have this true and this false. And so I'm going to put those over here. This is going to have to be true, and this is going to have to be false. Those are the values I have to assign. Now, if I can find some value of R that will make both of these things true, while this is false, then I prove the argument invalid. So, but I know now. I know that F is true and P is false, so in this case, in this premise, since F is true, I've got F is true, and in this case I've got P is false, So what I need to say is there some assignment of R that I can give that will make these things true and false? So first of all, I can put here that this is false, because F and P, you see, F horseshoe P is going to be false with these sets of values. So I've got that fine. Now I want to see if I can get a 1 here somehow, a true statement out of it. Now, if I know that F is true, then what is R going to have to be to make this statement true? It's going to have to be true, isn't it? It's the only way, because if that's false, then that makes this F horseshoe R false, and then I haven't been able to do what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to do is get true premises and a false conclusion to make the thing invalid. So if I assign R then, from this is going to have to be true, and that makes this statement, F horseshoe R, true. And now all we've got is left is this. Now I know that P has to be false and R has to be true. So false, true, that makes the statement what?
True.
Right. And so I have succeeded. I have found a set of values. If I make F true, P false, and R true, then both of my premises are going to be true, but my conclusion will be false. And so I've shown that this argument is invalid. Now actually, this turns out to be one of the lines in the truth table. And in this case, you have 8 lines. I'm not sure which line this would be, but this would be one of the 8 lines that you have in your truth table. And all we've really done is reproduce that without, you know, putting all the rest of it down. Okay? Now, it's not too bad with something like this, especially with horseshoes. It's pretty easy because there's only one way, one set of values that will make them false. If you've got one of these in the conclusion, then you can nail down what these two be. But if you've got the disjunction or something like that, then you may have to try a couple of lines here, a couple of possibilities before you find out, you know, which is which. But that's the essential way you work it out. It's just kind of working backwards. And all you're trying to do is get a false conclusion with true premises. And usually the best thing to do is say, what's going to make my conclusion false? And assign values that will make your conclusion false. Then see if you can find any set of values that will make both your premises true and your conclusion false. If you can, then you've got an invalid argument. If you can't, then your argument's valid. But sometimes, again, you have the problem of wondering, you know, if I'm just smart enough. You know, see, one thing, if you use both these methods, try to prove it true, if you can't get anywhere there, then you might check this real quick and see if you can find it's false right away. And if you can, then you'll relieve yourself of a great deal of frustration in trying to prove it right. But if you can't find it false, if you can't find any one of these sets of values, in a simple argument, you'll be able to tell that you can't do it. I'll show you one in just a minute. Where we'll try this with a valid argument, you'll see you can't do it. But if the argument's real complex, you know, one way or the other might be the quickest way of finding out which is which. Okay, let's look at another argument here, another example. It's a little bit more, slightly more difficult, say. A horseshoe B, B horseshoe B, A or B, therefore B or B. Okay, what I want to do is find some set of values that I can assign to B, C, A, D that will make the premise of all true, the conclusion false. Okay, now in this case, a disjunction. This one is good too. This one is nice because the only way you can make a disjunction false is to what? Both of them are going to have to be false. Because if either B or C is true, or both of them are true, the statement's true. But the only way I can make a disjunction false is to say C or Q is true, and false. It's only false when both members are false. So B and C both have to be false here. And so let's just make another quick. We got A, B, C, D. And B or C is the conclusion. I want that false. And therefore, if that's false, then B and C both have to be false. You'll put a 0 in both of these. Okay? Now I want to make all my premises true. A horseshoe B, C horseshoe D, and A or C. I want to make all of those true. Okay, now in order to make A horseshoe B a true statement, and since I already know that B has to be false from this, see, in order to get my conclusion false, I've got to have B false. So I know B is false. What assignment of A do I have to have in order to make that a statement true? False, right. I've got to have A false also. Because if A is true, then I've got a true in applying a false there, and that makes the whole statement false. That's the only place where an implication becomes false. So I've got that. Now I've got another piece of information here. I've got an assignment of A. That makes this statement true. Okay? That's what we needed. Okay, now C, horseshoe D, I want to make that true. Now I already know that C is false, and so actually from this alone, either assignment of D is going to make that statement true. So I know that one's going to be true no matter what I assign D to D, because in a implication, if the antecedent is false, then the statement's going to be true regardless of what the consequence is. So I still haven't been able to assign D. D could be either one to make this true. But over here, A or D, if I want that to be true, since I already know A is false, then D is going to have to be true. So I'll have to put a 1 here, and that'll make this true. And if I do that, then I've succeeded here. All of my premises are true, but my conclusion is false. And so I've shown this argument to be invalid. Okay? But sometimes, you can't necessarily assign these things. Like in this case, we couldn't really decide which to make D yet, because either way, it still comes out true there. And so this is the one that tells us that D is going to have to be true. Otherwise, it would have to make it false. All right? Anyone question on that? Yeah.
The case like that, where you have where D can be added value,
then
you actually have two lines
to choose from. Well, no, it wouldn't work then, because if I made D false, then this would be true, all right, but this one would be a zero, and I wouldn't have all the premises true and the conclusion false.
I mean, say in a statement where, let's say you didn't have the A or D, but slightly different.
Okay. Yeah. In other words, if I still got through this, and D could still be either way and still make these things true, then yes, you would. You'd have two lines where that would occur. Yeah, that's a good point. All you need to do is find one, you see. So all you've got to do is just make sure you find one. But there will be cases where, it may be more complex, where then several of the variables could be either way, and you still come up with it. That just means you've got more than one line in your truth table that ends up with two premises and a false conclusion. Yeah, that's a good point.
So what you do when you start out is what would be before? On all your premises, mark them true, conclusion false.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go back to each separate item for A.
You can do it that way.
And now in this case, B and C had to be false. So the only thing we had to work with were A and D.
Mm-hmm.
You only had to.
You only have to decide to try to find values for those two. Yeah. That's why it's good to start with a conclusion, oftentimes to see what you can have to make false right away. There's different ways of looking at it. There's different ways of approaching it and breaking these things down. But essentially what you're doing at the outset is marking all of these true and this false. And now what you're going to look in and see if I can get a consistent set of values. Now the important thing is that whatever you assign B here is going to have to be the same assignment here. In other words, you can't assign B false here and true here, because then you're inconsistent. You're going to try to find some consistent assignment of each of these values to make all of these things fall together. Yes?
So if you have a problem probably the easiest thing to do would be to go through your rules of temperature and get it down into this form rather than getting all involved. Because if you had a real big one,
yes,
you would be, A over here and A over here and A down here and A
here. You have to attack them a little bit differently, like you say. Now, if you don't know ahead of time that whether the thing's valid or invalid, you see. If you know it's valid already, if it's a big complex problem, then you just work it through the rules of inference. But if you don't know whether it's valid or not, one thing you can do sometimes is simplify the argument with those rules of inference and break it down a little bit into something simpler and then do something like this. Or in some cases, if your conclusion, sometimes you have a long argument, but the conclusion is real, a simple statement, either D or A or something like that. If you can make that false and then plug it back right up through, even though it's quite a chain of things, you still may be able to show the thing is invalid. So you kind of have to, develop a little savvy with these things if they're really big arguments, Fortunately, most of the time, when we're dealing with scripture, you're not going to deal with things that have a whole huge number of different premises. And you shouldn't have too much trouble applying as much as there. But if that's the case, you kind of have to work with it. And after a while, you get a feeling for what thing's going to be the easiest approach to it. Okay. Let's see what happens when we try to apply this to a valid argument and see what trouble you get into. You'll find out you can't do it. So let's take a valid argument. This is one that we did yesterday, showed to be valid. and we'll see what happens when you try a shoe of a syndrome.
Okay, let's take the argument J, horseshoe, K, or L, one of the story problems we had yesterday. Not K, therefore J, horseshoe, L. Okay. Again, whatever particular format you want to use, that's fine. Let's say we've got J, K, and L, our variables. Now the conclusion, J, horseshoe, L, is what we want to make false. Okay, in order to make the conclusion false, when it's an implication, again, we have to have J true and L false. So we'll put those assignments here, 1 and 0. That's the only way we can make the conclusion false, is to have the antecedent true that is the consequent false. Okay, now, in order to make this first premise true, remember in a disjunction, in order to make this first premise, we want to make this premise true. Let's put this down here, A or L. Or we could even do it with this. Let's maybe do it with this to be easier to start with. You can do it either way, pick either premise. But in order to make not K true, see, I want to make my premises true and conclusion false. I've already got my conclusion false here. I want to make not K true. That means what does K then have to be? K is going to have to be false in order to make not K true. Okay, so now I've got an assignment. Now let's see if that works up here. If I can get a true premise here, then the argument's invalid. Okay, so I've got that assignment of K, but look what happens. J, horseshoe, K, or L, I've got, let me see here. Yeah, you get in trouble either way. I'm doing it the reverse way I did it, the way I did it in the paper. That you did. Yeah. Okay, J, horseshoe, K, or L. In order to make this true, I have to have, you see, if J, horseshoe, K, or L is, if K and L are both false and J is true, then this statement's going to be false. I couldn't make it true. Because a disjunction, the only way it can be true is to have one element true. If I've got both K and L false, this is going to be false. And so I've got a true and a false, which makes this implication false. And so I couldn't get, this is my premise. I couldn't get these premises both true and then false. Now let's suppose I reverse it. Let's suppose I decide to make K true. Because if I make K true, then I can make this true. If K is true and L is false, then K or L is true, and J horseshoe K or L becomes true. But unfortunately, now not K becomes false. Because if K is true, then not K is false, and I still can't get both my premises true and my conclusion false. So this is a valid argument. I just can't find any assignment of values that will make the premises true and the conclusion false. And if I go to try to change J or L, if I change either one of those, then I make my conclusion true. If I make J false, you see, then J horseshoe L, if both of those are false, that becomes true. And if I make L true, then J horseshoe L is true. And so I'm stuck. There's no way that I can get true premises and false conclusion out of this. This is a valid argument. Okay. Now, any questions? Any more questions on this? Your thing. All right. There's one more thing I want to show you here before we wrap up. This is the last piece of information, and then we'll do some more problems. And that is kind of a peculiarity that happens. If you have a situation where your premises are inconsistent, this is what's called inconsistency, inconsistent argument. If your premises are inconsistent, and that's usually done by having them contain a contradiction, then it turns out that if the premises contain a contradiction, any statement can be proven, so to speak, proven, in quotes. Let me show you an example. Let's take the argument, today is Sunday, first premise. Today is not Sunday, is the second premise, because the contradiction is the first. Therefore, the moon is made of green cheese. Now, it's a ridiculous argument, but it turns out to be valid. And technically valid under our definition of validity. Now, not really valid. You know, nobody would try to, you know, say that this is logical reasoning here. But because of the way we've defined
a valid argument, you can actually use the rules of inference and come up with this. Let me show you how. Let's take S representing the statement today is Sunday, and not S represents the opposite of that, and let's say, therefore, M, the moon is made of green cheese. Now, we can prove that with our rules of inference. Step three, we can say S or M by the principle of addition from step one. Now, that's one of your rules of inference, addition. And then, from steps, we can prove M from steps two and three and the disjunctive syllogism. Because we have S or M and not S, therefore M. And so we've proven that the moon is made of green cheese from these two premises. But you see, there's something wrong. There's something fishy here. And the thing that's fishy is the contradiction in the premises. And you see now, maybe if you think about it, just looking at what we saw earlier, an argument is valid if you cannot have true premises and a false conclusion. But obviously, if you can't even have true premises, you can't have true premises and a false conclusion. And you can't have both premises true if they're contradictory. One's going to be true, one's going to be false. So there's no way you can get all your premises true to see if whether the conclusion comes out true or false. And that's the problem there, you see. So it's really kind of a technicality issue that I just thought I'd bring up because you have to watch sometimes, look at the premises, make sure they're consistent, make sure there's no contradiction in the premises themselves. If there is, then almost anything follows. Really, anything follows. You could put anything here for M, anything you wanted, and prove it by this because of the contradiction in the premises. And so it takes more than just a technically valid argument. A good argument is one that's valid and has consistent premises. And, of course, that's just something to watch for. And, again, the reason that this doesn't work is because of the way we've defined a valid argument. We defined a valid argument as one in which you cannot have true premises and a false conclusion. But any time your premises are true, your conclusion is true. But, obviously, if you can never get the premises true, then you can't prove the thing invalid. You can't show it's invalid because you can't find a place where the premises are true and conclusion false. You can't find a place where the premises are true, period. They can't both be true if they're contradictory. So that's just the way it works out. This, by the way, also answers the old riddle, what happens when an irresistible force meets an immovable object? What it means, essentially, is if you're going to say that an irresistible force exists and an immovable object exists, then what you really have is a contradiction. Because if there is an immovable object, then there is not an irresistible force, you see. And because the object is immovable. And if there's an irresistible force, then there's no immovable object because an irresistible force can move any object, you see. And so in essence, what you're really saying is there is an immovable object and there is not an immovable object. And so you're saying something like S and not S, or M and not M. And as soon as you said that, then anything follows. So you can have an argument like M, not M, therefore E. E represents everything. And so the answer to the riddle is, what happens when an irresistible force meets an immovable object? The answer is everything. Everything happens. But it's only because of an inconsistency. It's a contradiction in an argument. It's like the argument that some say, can God build a rock, make a rock that's bigger than he can lift or something? That's really the same thing. It's an inconsistent thing, contradictory premises, yes.
You know, you're defining, in this case, you're defining inconsistency as a contradiction.
Or yeah, it's a contradiction in the premises.
Right.
Yeah, upon which you're drawing. That's the essential problem here. Now, it could be, too, in some cases, where the premises are completely irrelevant to each other. And that gets a little bit more sophisticated. But, you know, in other words, where you can't draw any conclusion at all because there's just not enough information. That could perhaps be called inconsistent too, but in terms of what we're dealing with here, the essential problem is a contradiction in the premises. A way that the premises cannot all be true, you know, they just can't be true. So you have some sort of contradiction. The contradiction may not even be in two different steps, but within one step, like S and not S, you know. Once you have S and not S, the contradiction is right in one line there, and once you have that again, you can infer just about anything. Okay, any other questions on that? Yeah.
No, the best is to use the term inconsistent because that tells the person exactly what the problem is. The problem is in the premises rather than in the
a logical conclusion. So it's best to use the term inconsistent when you discover that the premises cannot all be true. They inconsistent, and which is even worse than being valid. I don't know which is worse, but you have to watch that sometimes because people will play little games like that with words and so forth. And the subtlety, again, comes in the language. Obviously, if you're going to say, today is Sunday, today is not, not Sunday, that's going to be a clear contradiction. Nobody's going to be tripped by that. But if you reword things, if you're dealing with a complex, several complex premises, then you can introduce a contradiction in there that may not be immediately obvious. And then when you look down through the symbolic logic, you will discover something wrong. And you'll see the contradictions in the premises.
Okay. Okay, with that, that's as far as we'll go as far as information is concerned. Let's continue to work some of these problems that we were working on yesterday then and see what we can do with them.
The two that I gave you on the board here we'll take first. And then we'll probably have a quiz, perhaps, I tentatively next Thursday, we'll have a quiz on this. Probably take a whole hour, and I'll just give you some problems to work on. I won't make them the hardest. I just want to see these different types of problems. And be sure you bring your rules of inference. You can bring your notes. You can bring anything you got, and go at it.
So some of them will be involving making truth tables. Others will involve using your rules of inference. So this should be problems to do. Some will be story type problems. We'll have to, interpret them and put symbols down. Also, on that problem with the railroad men and all of this, I'm working on that to give you a copy, everyone. I should have that to you by next time. That will break the whole thing down and give you all the symbols and so forth, and then I'll give you an answer sheet with all the answers on it as you go through it on your own, but there won't be any assignment. Yeah. Well, it depends on when you're in it, you use it a lot. When I took it to college, I found myself using it. And I'm finding now that, in some of the theological discussions, it's becoming very appropriate to use it. It's not always that you will actually sit down and write all the symbols out. But what you will find yourself doing is recognizing the fallacy, recognizing, where most opponents and some of these have been misused. Some of these things are real simple. You can pick it up right away. And then if you ever get yourself into more often when you're dealing with mathematics and things like that, you're going to use this kind of reasoning. But I think that the reason we wanted to bring this forth is, first of all, to sharpen our sensitivity to what we're seeing. And secondly, to maybe take on some arguments and some things that we haven't done before. In other words, I would like, and I expect in the future, and maybe some of you too, as you're studying the scriptures and you're dealing with a complex issue, to start applying some of these things just to simplify things and clarify things. There are many times when we will go through a long proof in words and we get our conclusion and everything, but it might be good for us just to check it by putting it in symbolic form and seeing how the thing works out. And you might find some errors that you might not have seen otherwise. So I think we're kind of moving into a new area now, and I haven't used it as much as I'd like to as far as theology is concerned. I'm starting to get to apply it, but this is kind of an area that we're all going to kind of move into together. One of the things we discussed is when we were discussing the grad program, what things might help us as far as the future is concerned. When we're writing books, when we're doing things that might be checked by somebody else, this would be a good way to check some things and just really be careful. You're not going to get a lot of the bigger arguments that we're doing. We're probably doing more than you'll ever really need to use, but you're going to understand things more. The more complex arguments you're able to handle, then you're not going to be intimidated by some things. And Paul's epistle, for example, will contain all kinds of premises, long, long series of arguments. It's good to be able to arrange in this way. So I would invite you and encourage you to start applying this to some of the things we find in the scriptures. And not so much even to the scriptures as when we're writing books, we're writing treatises, we're writing things to prove the oneness of God, we're writing things about the Holy Spirit and so forth, to make sure that we don't make some of these common stuff we started with on formal fallacies is really something that you can put into practice. And then, as far as some basic arguments are concerned, like the one I gave you yesterday with Romans 8, those kinds of things need to be observed and be carefully put together. And sometimes it's not going to be just one single passage either. There will be scriptures here and there all over the Bible that you'll be setting as premises and then drawing conclusions from it. we already do this. You know, when you go through the scriptures, facts, probability, possibility, in essence, you're doing the same thing. This is just a quicker way to, especially if you find yourself emotionally involved in it, it's good to just pull yourself out and put it in symbolic form, see what it comes out, whether you like it or not. You know, the rules will give you a certain answer, and it may not be the one you wanted, but it's good for you. So. Okay. And more than anything else, though, it's getting us to learn how to think and to sharpen our skills in reasoning. And you'll find yourself recognizing things you may not have recognized before. You've got a name to call it now, and you've got something that, you know, will help identify some of these things and solve some problems you might have fallen into otherwise. And it's going to increase your credibility with others, too, when you're talking, and they throw out some of these terms, and you know what they're talking about, and you can identify that their fallacies and reasoning and so forth. It's going to cause them to know you're not some little country bumpkin that's come along here. You know what we're talking about. You know the principles of logic. You know how to reason, and you're not easily taken in by, you know, what they're saying. You can expose the fallacy behind it. And evolutionary reputation, of course, you see this. You do this all the time. You've seen the circular reason, what they're doing, and false premises and this kind of thing. Okay, let's look at a couple of those examples. First one that I had yesterday, G horseshoe, not H. Horseshoe I, not G or not H, therefore I. Okay, anybody want to come up and finish that? Let's see. We'll predict 5 steps for this. We'll do it less than that. You beat me.
I got a 4, but I test the problem.
Okay.
With G and Q.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. You can do that. Do it that way.
Step 1 is...
You don't always have to do it the same way. You know, there's several different ways to do it. This is actually a quicker way. And what he's done there is... No, wait a minute. Oh,
Well,
yeah, okay.
It's not H above and not H.
Yeah, okay, that's what he's done. He just symbolized not H by... That's where the extra step comes in, of actually having to make a statement of that. But, you know, it's no real big deal. As long as you can keep the consistent value all the way through here. Yeah, that's what he does. So, actually, the specific form, though, to define specific form, you would have to use a not to use a specific form. But then you can still apply the rules as though that is more quantity. So you're all right there. Okay. So let me just go back and finish it out this way, the way some of you might have done it. What you can do is go not G, horseshoe, not H, from step 2, identification. Because you can get a horseshoe symbol here by negating both terms here. And you're negating the first one, so you get not G, horseshoe, not H, from implication. And then, from double negation, you can get G, horseshoe, not H, from double negation, step 3. Because two negatives is a positive here, so that just becomes the same as G, horseshoe, not H. And then, taking this up here from modus ponens, you get I, 1, 4. Okay. And you could have put this in P's and Q's too. All right.
Step 4 is the same as number 1. Step 4 is the
same. No, it's not quite the same, because step 1 is G, horseshoe, not H, horseshoe, I. So what I've done here is I've gotten the antecedent to this conditional from step four, from this, through this series. Now I can plug this whole quantity up here, knowing it's true. If this is true, then this has got to be true from most corners. So from this step and this step, you see, from this step I get, it's just like P horseshoe Q, P, therefore Q. Okay?
Everybody believe it?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, what we're doing is, first of all, the first thing you should do is, you see, this is the conclusion we're trying to get is I. Okay? Now, from your two premises, you see that this is the only one that's got an I in it. So, obviously, in order to get I, you're going to have to get this somehow as being true. If you can get the first part of this conditional as being true, then the second part follows from Lotus points. If P, then Q. And if you've got P, then you've got Q. So, that's what you're looking for. You know this is the conclusion you're trying to get. And if you see from this first premise that you can get that, it's somehow you can get this to be true. Now, you should say, I've got another premise. If this premise somehow is the same as this premise, then I'll get this. It doesn't look the same yet, but see if I can find some rule that I can juggle this around and make it into this. And if I can make this out of this, then I can get this. Okay? All right? So, the way you do that is start fooling around a little bit. You may not have a revelation to start with exactly what you're going to come up with, but if you look at your rule of inference, you'll see that, first of all, you have a horseshoe up here and you have a disjunction here. Is there any way I can turn a disjunction into a horseshoe somehow? Well, there is. And if you use the rule of implication, let's see here, which number is it? 16? Yeah, material implication. P horseshoe Q is equivalent to not P or Q. And that means not P or Q is equivalent to P horseshoe Q. Same thing. So what I'm going to do here is take this. I've got a not P or a Q, and like Daryl did, I'm going to treat this not H as if it's just one thing. See? So what I can do then, well, let's see. Actually, what I did is okay, I guess I really didn't need this step here. I could have gone right from here right to here. Okay, yeah, let's just take that out. Because you can actually do it just going, I think I just eliminate that. Because from this and this, these things can become equivalent simply from implication. You don't even need to worry about the implication. I'm not sure why I got it down that way. Okay. Okay. What I'm doing, in effect, is making this a not P or Q, where Q is equal to not H. And then from that, I can get P horseshoe Q from that implication. See, I'm starting with the one on the right instead of the one on the left. I've got something that's got a not something here, and then I'm just going to treat this whole thing as one quantity. I'm going to treat it as a Q, and from that I can get E horseshoe Q, or in this case, E horseshoe not H. Okay, so I only really need three four steps, not five. And from that, now I've got what I wanted up here, and I can get I by modus ponens. Okay. Okay, now do you see the connection between these two? Okay. Sometimes you have to look at a piece of thing all as one thing in order to break these things down right.
That's the way I did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how. I can't figure out now how I did that. So I repent.
You're actually doing more steps than are written down, but the implication is already in your mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You write it down, it looks like another step, but it really isn't, because it's actually like the 2A, you know, because you're doing it as a part step.
Mm-hmm.
And using it up with this now.
Yeah. So what we're really doing is just treating this whole thing as a unit here, and once you do that, then you can just do it one step. But in effect, in your mind, what you're doing is another step. Yeah, this implication should be applied to step two. You're doing step two now, and you're coming from this. You're coming up with this simply by that implication, simply by that statement. And then from that, you've got what you wanted up here. You know, you get the motor components, step one and step three. Change the numbers here, position the step up. Implication. Yeah, not a question.
Well, I just figured out by implication that step one, first part of step one, and step two were the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, either way, by,
mm-hmm.
you know, by using step two or using step one,
you
figured out they were the same thing. And
yes. Yeah, that's all you've done here. You should state it, though, you know, state it as a separate thing so somebody else is looking at your work and say, this is how they got this to be the same as that. In other words, you could just say, no, I'll just take it from right here because I recognize these two are the same. But you really need to state the sameness of these two because they want, you know, and when you're doing a proof like this, you want to make every step as clear as possible so that for somebody who follows you, that's why, for example, when you get a double negation, say I had not G, you could just, you know, as soon as you knew there was a double negation there, you could just drop those two off there. But the person that's following you might not follow that, so that you should take another step to say G from that by double negation. Just so that somebody following you knows what you did. And this is really important in geometry proofs and everything else. Even though step, you know, you're doing a lot of things in your mind real quick. In fact, you look at this, and if you recognize this right away, you can see, boom, right off, you've got it, you know. And why go through all the steps? But if you're going to rigorously show it to somebody, you need to go through the steps. And it's good discipline to you because there's going to be times when it won't be obvious. And you're going to want to make sure you take every step real carefully and clearly. Okay, let's look at the next one I gave you. Somebody practice this one. J or K horseshoe, not L. L, therefore, not J. Okay, who wants to try it? I did it in 7. Got 6? Okay. I'll put 7 down. You can do it less than that. You might be able to.
Do I have to take double negation?
Oh. That would help. Okay. Is everything right now? Okay. I didn't bother to try to figure out all the different ways to do it.
No, I'm going that way now.
If you try shorter ones, this last time you can do it, you can take them in different orders. Yes. Double negation from this premise, you can get not L. Okay. Now, from modus tollens, when you negate the, you've got not L, then you can get not this. Okay. So you've got not J or K. And then from De Morgan's, it becomes not J and not K. It's a simplification, you can get not J. Okay, that's good. Yeah, you can do it in a different order if you want. I did it in a different order. Yeah, I ended up with one more step because I put another double negation step in. I'll show you the way I did it. Some of you might have done it this way. This is the first way I saw here. Started over again here. Okay, what I did was, first of all, started out with
I went not, not L, horseshoe, not J or K. But from step one, transposition. So you can negate both, you can negate a horseshoe and reverse the terms. So what I did is not, not L, horseshoe, not. And then what you could have done is, well, from this, I want L, horseshoe, not J or K. Step three in double negation. So, not, not L, just L. So I've got L, horseshoe, J or K. That's where the extra step comes in, is just telling you that this double negation. You can avoid that by just putting it, you know, like you did here, and doing uses and most tolerance with a negative, not have to worry about that. And then, now that you've got L from this, and you've got L horseshoe, not J or K, then you get not J or K from steps 2 and 4, most tolerance. And step 6, not J and not K. Step 5 for Morgan, same thing you did here. And then step not J. Simplification, step 6. Let me do it different. Did you do it in a different order, Mark? Or? Okay. So you just reverse the order of this. You just did UD Morgan on this first and got this term up here. Yeah. Sure. You don't always have to do this in the same order, you see. You can, especially with these substitution ones. It doesn't really matter what order you do it in. Just that depends on what you see first and so forth. Okay? So if you don't have the steps in the same order as this, that doesn't mean you got the problem wrong. That's the point. If you followed the rules and were able to come up with a conclusion like that, then you probably got it right if you're careful. Okay. Let's look at another one here. M dot N dot O, horseshoe P, Q, horseshoe, O dot M dot N, therefore not true for P. Okay. Let's see, we've got 5 minutes. We can get it 5 minutes. Come on up. Okay, I did it. As soon as somebody feels like you've got it, go ahead and make your mark on the board.
Thank you.
mind to look at that if you want. Obviously, by looking at it, you can tell that you can arrange those any way you want. But in order to go through the steps, you have to write that out. You know. Somebody's got it. Go ahead and get one more minute, so put it on the board. Okay, maybe I should mention something here first, and that is that simplification is something you have to do not on a part of a statement, but on a whole statement. So it really won't work there. In other words, if all you had was n.n.o without the horseshoe p, then you can apply simplification. But this is a good illustration of the fact that it may work out okay in this case, but you'll get in trouble if you do that, because it won't always hold that simplifying this out will still keep this conditional right. So you can't really apply simplification. One of those that you have to apply on a whole step, not on a part of a line. The last ten rules, you can apply to part of a line, but the first ten, you've got to apply to the whole line. Okay? Yeah, this is the way you'll end up doing it. Essentially, we're out of time here, but essentially what he's going to do is, you notice that your conclusion is not Q or P. That's the same as saying, because of the implication, this is the same as saying Q horseshoe P. And you can see from these two premises that if this is really the same as this, then by your hypothetical syllogism, you're going to be able to get Q horseshoe P from these two statements. And that's the same as this. So what you want to do somehow is show that this term is the same as this term. And it really is. Even though what we've got to do here, first of all, is to regroup our parentheses and then reverse our terms. And you can do that by first association. You can take, like what he did here, by association from this step, you can put your parentheses over here. That's from step two by association. And then you can take these two terms and swap them around by commutation. And then you have exactly what you have here. And once you've got that commutation in this step, then you can take, by the hypothetical syllogism, you can get Q horseshoe P, and then it's just one step there to say not Q or P.
The way that I looked at this was, I don't care what you say, this has to be equal to this.
Uh-huh.
If this isn't equal to this, then this isn't valid.
Yeah,
because all these here are all true,
sure.
So I just wrote this off as R and this off as R.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't even bother proving, proving these two,
sure.
Because obviously they aren't. So then I just went, from there I just went.
Right.
And then,
not do or do.
Sure.
Yeah, but so, see, if you're doing a rigorous proof, you need to show, to look at these, that's the thing. You say, yes, they got to be the same, because this function will commute and you can associate so forth with it, but you need to go through the steps to show how this works on that. That's the only thing. It seems a little bit, drudgery or whatever, but
we'll have to make up my new law.
Yeah, we can have a new law there. You can just wrap it up. Parker's rule.
Have all the 20 different combinations of these here put together, you know, they're always the same.
Yeah. Any varied combination of conjunctions can be ordered any way you like.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this case it will work, but there are times when it won't. So just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, that's very significant.